How do we ensure that we are creating environments that are inclusive for all young people in our programs? You're listening to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series, and I'm Carrie Rabideau, an Extension educator. In this podcast, we will explore that question with Darcy Cole, who's also an Extension educator, who has extensive experience and expertise in this area. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from you today, Darcy. Thank you for joining me.
Well, Carrie, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be able to share a little bit about my experience and some of the things I've learned through my work with Extension and working specifically with special needs youth.
Thank you, Darcy, because you're going to share 7 tips for youth workers today to help them make sure that they are creating inclusive environments for special needs youth in their programs. Before we get to those, though, will you please share your experience in this area and provide us with a definition for special needs youth that your tips will be helping us with today?
Absolutely. So a little bit of experience, kind of background on myself. I have worked for University of Minnesota Extension in a local role for, 14 years almost. I've seen a wide variety of youth that have come through our program, and some of those have been youth with special needs, but it's also something that is personally important to me because I have 3 children, 2 of which have special needs. It's something that is a part of my life every single day. So very important to me both professionally and personally. And I think that that personal experience allows me to bring a little bit different perspective to working with 4-H youth within our program. The easiest way that I have that I define a special needs youth is anybody who has difficulty. It could be a difficulty that could be a physical difficulty, emotional, mental, whatever that might look like, and needs extra support in order to be successful in youth programs.
And as I mentioned, and as the listeners can hear, you have both that experience coming from your personal life as well as from your professional life. I'm really looking forward to getting these tips from you today. As I mentioned, you have 7 of them for us that we'll be sharing through this podcast. So let's jump right into those and get started. The first one that you provide is to do your homework.
Yeah, and essentially what I mean by that is that you need to be proactive in how you are engaging with special needs families. That means that you need to make extra effort to be connecting with parents of special needs youth because they are going to be your best resource and tool that you can use to support young people in our program. And by doing your homework, that means having conversations before someone comes to a program with you so that you can talk with that parent about how that child interacts with others, what it makes them be successful or what things hinder their success in programming, and kind of relying on them as being the experts on their young person, which is what we would want all parents to be. So it's really about just connecting and being proactive with those parents.
Darcy, when you talk about doing your homework with the young people who are in your program, I can imagine the best place to do that is with the parents themselves. What has been your experience about how do we ask questions? Is it okay to ask questions? Give us some tips on how we should do the homework in a way that's respectful, but that also gets us the information that we're looking for to make sure that the young person in our program has the best experience possible.
I think honestly, the hardest part about doing your homework is having the comfort in yourself as a staff to have those conversations. Most parents are very willing to share with you about their young person because they want to see them be successful in your program. And they also appreciate the fact that you're asking and that you're thinking proactively about how to help their young person be successful. So I would say you just need to have those conversations, and the more of those conversations you have, the easier it will become because you'll start to develop some comfort in that. And I think a lot of that revolves around you asking some leading questions, but then letting the parents drive those conversations. So it might be, you know, things as simple as, tell me a little bit about your child, just really getting to know that child, and then using that as a lead-on point to talking about, like, what things are maybe the school doing that's making your child be successful, or what things are you doing at home that ensures the success of your child, and how can we as youth development staff use some of those same techniques to be successful with your child. And it's really about helping those parents understand that you want their child in your program, you want them to be successful, And that's how we're having this conversation and reaching out early versus it being a negative experience. And then you as a staff having to go back to those parents and have that conversation and say, well, your kid was at a program and it went pretty bad. So how can we make it better next time? You know, it's a lot harder to have that conversation than it is to have the initial conversation of, you know, we want to see your child be successful. How can you help us have them be successful? So it's really about developing that partnership and sharing that shared interest in their child and the want and the need to see them be successful. Let those parents drive that conversation, but also help them to understand that you want their kid to be successful. You want them in your program, and that's why you're having that conversation.
Don't be afraid to ask.
Absolutely, because most parents are, they're not going to be offended that you're asking. They're going to be appreciative that you actually care enough to ask.
Let's move on to your second tip, which is to be flexible.
Absolutely. And that is about, you know, you have a plan in your mind of what you think things are going to look like or how things are going to play out within your programming. And this is about still having that plan, but also knowing that things may need to change. It might need to change how it happens or what you're doing based on those youth needs and based on how they're reacting with the program that they're attending and with you as a staff. Being willing and knowing that you need to be flexible and not having the, here's the plan of what we're doing and we're not changing that no matter what. It's really about just, yes, having that plan, but knowing that that plan may need to be fluid based on how things are going and thinking about that ahead of time and thinking about how could we maybe adapt things? How could we change things up depending upon the interactions and depending upon how things go throughout the day? So the third tip that I would have for listeners is to show understanding. And that is about trying to be as empathetic and trying to understand the experience of our program participants and really just being thoughtful and considerate of their needs. And also realizing that as a staff person, we're not probably ever going to fully understand what those kids are thinking or what their needs are, but we can do our best. And I think that's all that people will really expect of us. I will say as a parent of special needs youth, I don't always understand everything my kids are going through and I live with them every day. So I think as staff, you know, obviously we're not going to either, but it's about being as understanding as we can, trying to see things from a different perspective sometimes, because the experiences that these special needs youth may be having may be totally different from anything that we've ever experienced, but just trying to understand that and trying to see things from a different view. Showing understanding that also really leads into my next tip, which would be to use supports and cues. Special needs participants in our programs may need some additional resources beyond what typical youth may need in order to be successful. Some of those things could be examples such as visuals, so it could be a visual schedule. And essentially, that is pictures of some sort that show you what you're going to be doing throughout the course of your program. It's kind of like how a lot of us have a to-do list in our calendar. It just is a visual way for youth to be able to see that and know, I'm going to do this, and then this, and then this. And it just allows them, especially youth that may have special needs like autism, that maybe are a little bit more rigid in their thinking and not as adaptable, it allows them to understand how things are going to flow and takes out some of the element of surprise, which may cause meltdowns or other situations that if you can avoid them, do it. So use visuals. Another is things that are audio prompts. So could be as simple as reminders to stay on task, or as you're working on things to just do reminders of, all right, we have 5 minutes left. Okay, you have 3 minutes left. Like just giving those reminders or even things of, we're gonna do this and then we're gonna do this. So just to help people to really, again, reinforce timelines and what we're doing and what's coming next, and just to be able to help them stay on task. Another is physical reminders. So it could be things such as just, you know, tapping somebody on the shoulder and reminding them like, okay, you need to calm your body right now. You need to be able to sit and do that. So just some of those things to really help direct as youth are working. And, you know, there's just a ton of resources and a ton of different supports and cues that you can use for our youth. And for adults for that fact. And you can find a lot of those things, either like talk to parents. Again, it comes back to doing that homework. They're going to be great advocates for their youth. And if you have that conversation with them of what things are you using at home or being used at school, there's no reason that we can't bring those into our field as youth development professionals and be able to replicate some of those things too. Just use those extra supports and things to help youth be able to understand their world and know what you've got going on for them.
As you talked through that tip, a couple things came to mind for me. One, those sound like tips that would be effective for all young people in your program. And might you ever utilize older youth in your program to help develop those visual schedules or some of the cues that you were talking about? Have you ever incorporated your older youth leaders into those roles?
Absolutely have. And like you mentioned, these supports are things that will help all people be successful in your programming. Like I said earlier, we all use, a lot of us at least, use a calendar and write those things down. We just don't really think of that as maybe a support, but it's essentially what it is. What youth in your program wouldn't benefit from knowing what they're going to do next? I mean, everybody would. So they're things that, and I would say across the board, pretty much any accommodation that you make for a young person with special needs is going to be a benefit for others too, that don't have needs, just because it's going to provide them with more structure. It's going to provide them with more of an idea of what is happening around them. Yeah, definitely they will help. And I have used youth to help develop those things and help develop those timelines and, you know, write things out on boards or get things ready. It helps them too. It helps those youth that you have there as leaders within your program, because they also know what to expect for the day. So it's a great way to do some interaction with your youth between older and young kids is by having them really serve as those mentors and help them to develop those tools to support them. Our tip number 5 would be to establish relationships. And with that is really about being intentional in creating open and honest relationships with youth and also with their parents. Youth with special needs, it may be harder for them to develop a close relationship with others outside of their family than a typical youth. So it's really important in these situations that you are intentionally taking extra steps to be helping them to develop those relationships. And once you have those relationships in place, I can tell you from personal experience that youth will do much better in your program because they have a connect with you, like they personally know you, versus if they're coming there and they don't have that relationship. And I think it's important to be honest and open so that those youth feel they can tell you what's going on and they can tell you something's not working or if they have ideas of other things to do. And the same is true with parents. You know, when you're having, especially with those parents, conversations, it's okay to tell those parents, like, I don't know sometimes, or to tell them, like, I don't have experience with this, but we're going to make this work. We're going to try this out. So it's just being open and honest with those parents as well and developing those relationships, because it's a lot easier to have conversations with them if you feel like that you have a connect with them and if they have a connect with you. You know, if you don't have a relationship with a parent of a special needs youth, it's going to be a lot harder for them probably to be open and honest with you about what their youth needs. But if they know you and they feel like you really are invested in their child's success and you have that open and honest conversation, they're going to be more likely to ask and be able to really tell you what their youth needs. So just really work to develop those strong relationships with both youth and adults. And then kind of going along with that, tip number 6 is to be positive. And that is something that you probably have kind of heard me talking about as we're talking about parent conversations and having some of those proactive things. It's really about looking at what the young person is good at and passionate about versus looking at what are the things that they can't do. And that's a key way when you're framing those conversations too, to make sure that you are positive. And it's not a conversation of, well, I know your child can't do this, but what can they do? You know, it's more a conversation of, hey, I know your child is really passionate about trains. How can we take that passion and infuse that into our program? Or I know that your child is really good at memorizing things. How can we utilize that in our program to benefit the rest of the kids within it? So it's really about just looking at what are they good at and passionate about, and not placing emphasis on those things that are more of a struggle for the youth in your programs. And then the 7th tip is to have a plan and a backup plan. So we talked about earlier being flexible and kind of thinking about how things might play out in your program. This really ties into that because it means that, you know, we need to realize that things don't always happen how we think they're going to happen. We can have this grand plan in our mind of how we think everything's going to play out for the day, but sometimes it goes that way, and sometimes it is the opposite of that, which most of you probably know. And that is even more likely to happen in a program where you are interacting with special needs youth, because they may not be as predictable as other youth in your program. So you really need to think ahead of time, how are we going to do this? What's this going to look like? And have a plan A, B, C, and maybe D. So really to have options of things that you can do and options of things that you can try differently or tweak if they aren't being successful with the youth in your program. So just knowing ahead of time and intentionally thinking about that and having plans in place to fall back on should you need to do so. In summary of those tips I share, I think it's important for us to realize as youth development professionals that all of these things are things that we know how to do and we're probably already doing within our program, but it's more about thinking intentionally about them. A lot of times what we do might sometimes feel like it's on the fly a little bit, but with working with special needs youth, we need to really think about that and plan for that, because it's something that we don't experience as often in our programming as we might maybe think or as we might hope that we might. So it's really about just thinking about them and being intentional about how you are interacting and know that you have the skill set to be able to do all of this. It's really about just having confidence in that and taking some time to intentionally think about how you can do better at it.
Well, I really appreciate you bringing it up in that way, because we have the skills as youth workers. We know how to do this. But by creating partnerships with parents or guardians, asking questions, communicating, being empathetic, and making a few adjustments, we can make sure that all of the young people who come to our programs feel safe and they feel like they belong. Darcy, you have significantly contributed to the diversity and inclusion resource page on our University of Minnesota Extension website. Can you tell us more, for those listening who want to learn more, who want to dig a little bit deeper, what they could find on that website and other resources that you might direct them to?
Absolutely. So on the website that Carrie had just mentioned, there are a few tools that are designed just overall broadly for special education. One of those is a accessibility assessment, and that is really to look at the facility that you are using for your meeting or your program and to determine, is it a site that is accommodating to different types of special needs that might be present in our audience? And doesn't mean that, you know, if you're marking no on some of those, you need to go to a totally different site, but it also gives on there, if you're marking no someplace, ideas of how to make that better for special needs audiences. Also on there, there is an accommodation request form, and that is a tool that you can use either to guide your conversation with parents or guardians around what their youth needs are and what type of accommodations we can use to be successful with them, or it could be used as a form for a parent to actually fill out and provide that information to you. There are also a lot of tools and resources on there that are specific to autism spectrum disorder. Some of those things include a tip sheet that kind of gives some of the information shared today, plus more, that really just talks through what type of things you can do in your program to help those youth be successful. Also on there, there are a number of different visual supports. So there are two different types of visual schedules. There is like one where you would have pictures and the youth would be able to mark off like, yes, we accomplished this, we did this, we did this. And it really helps them to kind of see that calendar, that to-do list of what the day is going to look like. There's also a visual schedule that is called a first, then, next. And what that is it has three boxes where you would put pictures of three things you're going to do in order. And it's something that a lot of us, I think, use mentally, but maybe not in a written format. But basically, you have those three things, and typically the third thing is like the reward thing you want to do. It might be like, you know, if we look at it as a youth worker, like our mental one might be like, check my email, do this newspaper document, and then after that, I can like plan this fun program. So that third thing is like the thing that you want to do. And it's also useful for youth because they can go, okay, I have to do these two things, and then I get to do this one thing. So it's really used as a motivational tool for them. So that is a tool that's also available on the website there as well. And then there are a couple of our social stories. For those of you who aren't really familiar with what a social story is, it is a story that talks through a situation that a youth may experience, or an adult for that fact, and shows them like, here's what we're going to do and here's what it's going to look like. And it really describes the social nuances of how they should act, how others are going to act, what they should feel in that situation. And really it's used as a tool ahead of time for them to be able to prepare and get a little bit of a feel of what they're going to do, how they should act in that situation. So it's really a prep tool. So those are some of the tools that are on the website.
And I'd like the listeners to know that I have put that website into the description of this podcast so that they can go right to that to dive into those resources. Darcy, thank you for sharing those 7 tips with us today. You provided really helpful information for youth practitioners to help them determine how to accommodate their environment for special needs youth. And we all want to make all youth welcome in our programs. And having these resources available and having resources like you available is just so important. And I again, really appreciate you sharing your expertise and your experience with us today.
Thank you, Carrie. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to share a little bit.
And for those of you listening, please go right to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth for research-based information on a variety of youth development programs and information. And also, I invite you to check out our 4-H program if you haven't already. In addition to the resources that Darcy described for us earlier, she has also written a couple blog posts on our Youth Development Insight blog that I encourage you to read and comment on, continue this conversation, ask her questions, and also share resources that perhaps you have used that have been helpful for you as a youth practitioner. Finally, I'd like you to look on the right side of that website. We have a new category that we've added that's called Working with Youth from a Distance. And this will provide you with more resources on how to continue working during difficult times. At the time of this podcast recording, we have COVID-19 cancellations and changes to how we're working with programs. And that website is there for a resource to help you through this time. Again, thank you for joining me today, Darcy. This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.